Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 8th of May, 2018, just one more day before the national election, our 14th PRU. Our 14th national election is tomorrow. So most of us may have to wake up early to go for the poll, to exercise your right as a rakyat. So tomorrow will be an interesting day, but be careful when you are voting. So dress properly. Don't go and dress until they reject you and doesn't allow you to go in. No slipper, I was told. Then you must not wear, like my daughter, the T-shirt cannot. Any party T-shirt, they won't allow you in. So you have to dress properly. The other thing also, the parking could be a problem. So you make sure if you can't find parking, you have to walk a bit, you walk a bit. But avoid having unnecessary problem. If you park at illegal place or at people's house, you have to be sensitive. Also, if you park at places where you block traffic, also you have to be sensitive, because when they can't find you, your car may get into trouble. So all this our advice to people. Then after the voting, the other thing is handphone, isn't it? You are not supposed to on your handphone. If you ring inside there or take photo, they can refuse to let you vote, I was told. Then also the voting paper, after they ink your hand, you be careful, don't stain the voting paper. And when you look at the voting paper, if you want to check, you check just for two things, the chalk, the serial number, then the other one is whether there's any stain on the voting paper or not. Then if none, you just make sure you got two slips, one parliamentary and one state. Then you go to the place they prepare for you with the, I think, three sites already enclosed, where you can have your own decision to vote whatever party you want to. Then you cross only within the box. Don't cross outside the box. They advise you have tissue, bring a tissue paper, at least to clean the hand that is being stained. Then after that, keep the tissue paper so that it will not stain your ballot paper. Otherwise, you got two hands on it. Then apart from that, I think it's okay. The rest are straightforward. Okay, so now we get ready for puja. Today is Tuesday, 8th of May, 2018, our Tuesday class. So let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Sing Fusa. Namo Quan Sing Fusa. Namo Quan Sing Fusa. Namo Amitabha, Namo Amitabha, Namo Amitabha, Namo Milofo, Namo Milofo, Namo Milofo, Namo Fusien Pusa, Namo Fusien Pusa, Namo Fusien Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang sama sambuto bhagawa butang bhagawantang abhiwademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Turn to page 1. We will continue with the Vandana chanting. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikha samadhiyami adina dana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami kamesu vichachara viramani sikha padang samadhiyami Musawada viramani sikha padang samadhiyami Suramiraya majjhapamadatana viramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Okay, now we will chant the Padipa Puja offering of light. Kanna sara padithena dithena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambara yuthena dophena hang sugang hina Pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana muttamang vanna ganda guno phethang etang kasuma santatin pujayami munindas siri pada sarorohe Pujemi buddhang kasumena nena punnena matena cha hotu mokhang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tatayati vinasa bhavang adivase tu no bante Paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivasetu nobante pale parikapitang anukampang upadaya Patikan hatu mutamang adivase tu no bante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patikan hatu mutamang. Now we are chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Understanding the significance of offering of light to the Buddha. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the importance of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of oral aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas of power. Sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the conditions and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then today, since we are going to stop our class early because 10 o'clock, there will be a live telecast, I think, from Tuan Mahathir, the Langkawi side, I think, to all the 122 nation parliamentary seat, I think. So my daughter had actually connected the team. If you want to see here, you can see. Otherwise, you can go home and see. So he will connect to our TV, so you can follow. Because I think a lot of people will be interested in his final charama, the speech. No, like, it's definitely before 12. I think 1 hour, like, if I'm not wrong. 1 hour is really very long. He's 93 years old. Then the other thing is also, I think many Kayamita, they have taken this opportunity to go home to vote. So most of them are also not here. So what we will do is we skip the meditation so that we got more time for sharing. I want to finish off that chapter. That day I only cover 2 pages. So we will straight away go to page 6, invocation to the devas. We will chant it. Invocation to the devas. In this universe in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samantaha Chakawalesu Atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajasa sunantu sakamokadam Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho. Jacarana sampanno sugato lokavido. Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati. Satta deva manusana buddho bhagavati. Swakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko. Ehi paseko opanaiko. Pachyatang viditabho vinohiti. Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho. Ujjupatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho. Nyayapatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho. Samichipatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho. Yadidang chatari purisa yukkani atta purisa pugala. Esa bhagavato sāvakkasaṅgho. Pāhuneyo pāhuneyo dākkeneyo anjalikaraneyo anuttaraṁ puṇyakhetaṁ lokasāti. Sādhu sādhu sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Puja. Bedang Puja ini. Damang Puja ini. Sanghang Puja ini. Okay, you can be seated. Then let us rejoice with the offering by Yunchan, the mango. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. We shall continue from where we stop. I think we stop at page, if I'm wrong, is. If I'm not wrong, it's 299. Yeah, page 299. Yeah. Okay. I think we finished the paragraph before that. We are now at the last two paragraphs on happiness.
Oh,
that part on pessimism, did I go through you? Didn't I? I think this one. The author of the article on pessimism in the Encyclopedia Britannica writes, pessimism denotes an attitude of hopelessness towards life, a vague general opinion that pain and evil predominates in human affair. The original teaching of the Buddha, or doctrine of the Buddha, is in fact as optimistic as any optimism of the West. To call it pessimism is merely to apply it to a characteristically Western principle according to which happiness is impossible without a personality. The true Buddhists look forward with enthusiasm to absorption into eternal bliss. So this is the part where this author on pessimism wrote. I believe the reason why people always comment that Buddhism is very pessimistic, and I think they have a reason for it. You know the reason is that, because when I gave Dhamma talk or sharing at temple, when they asked me to share the Four Noble Truths, every time I ask, what is the first noble truth? You know what they tell me? Life is suffering. So I have to explain. Because if you quote the Buddha wrongly, then you will paint the impression that Buddhism is really pessimistic. Because to Buddhists, they will tell you, to them, the teaching say life is suffering. Why do you want to learn that religion, they say? Why do you want to go and believe and have faith in that religion which teach you nothing else but suffering? Then it sounds logical, you know. Then especially if they are Christian or those religion that teach you love. They say, come to ours. Ours is all love, compassion and all those things. You are born sinner. You are born sinner. So that part you can counter them. So born sinner means you are sinner. So according to their religion, sinner will be punished to eternal hell. But the Buddhist understanding of the teaching is different. That's why that teaching that we learn, the Buddha Dhamma, is so different. So to say Buddhism is pessimistic is not understanding its true teaching. That's the reason why I shared with you early on. If you truly understand the Buddha Dhamma, the essence of the Buddha's teaching is the Four Noble Truths. When you understand the Four Noble Truths, you understand the secret of life we have gone through last week. So it's still on the whiteboard if you want to have a look. So Buddhism is a very unique teaching. The teaching of the Buddha is called Dhamma. So when you understand this teaching, Dhamma is truth, essentially, all truth. But the essence of his teaching is the Four Noble Truths. So when you understand this teaching, the essence of his teaching is the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha said, you will understand the secret of life, both mundane and supramundane. So it's very comprehensive. Then the Buddha never say life is suffering. In the first noble truth, instead, he proclaimed this noble truth of suffering. He said suffering is a noble truth. This suffering is very unique, he said. If you were to exist in this universe, if you were to go through life, you will confront a lot of realities in life, the Buddha said. And in his teaching, he quoted 8 realities which we have gone through. He said, when you confront this 8 reality without wisdom, then you will be afflicted. Suffering will follow you. You will become miserable, unhappy, then sometimes even fearful. You may even develop sorrow and lamentation, sadness, leading to depression and other things. So this is a noble truth. What the Buddha is trying to tell you is, without wisdom, without an understanding of life or his teaching, suffering is everywhere. That's why prevalence of suffering. So this first noble truth talk about the reality of life and existence. And this reality, you can witness them all over the world as you go through life, as you confront life. So this aspect is very important. So the first noble truth explain to you the mundane reality of life. Within life, within existence, suffering is everywhere when you are deluded, when you don't have the understanding and the wisdom to confront all this reality. And this reality, not only you are subject to it, the Buddha said, every living being that comes to this existential world, and you live long enough, you will have to confront each and every one of them. Then he said, when you confront them without understanding, you suffer. So the second noble truth explain to you the cause of arising of suffering. According to the Buddha, he said, it is mainly craving that is the cause of suffering. And craving, there are many types. Craving born of self-delusion, when you believe that there is a personality and ego within you, means this five aggregate of form and mind, or the human being, the first aspect is what you are. Then all of your thought process is also what you are. Then every feeling that arises, you believe is real, is you. Then every moment of perception, every moment of consciousness, every moment of mental states or mental activity, the thinking, the holding on to the views, the opinion and all those things, they are the aggregates of mind which are impermanent, lead to suffering. So suffering will arise when you deludedly believe that they are you or they belong to you. So this cause of suffering is very important. When you know the cause behind, and when you understand what suffering is, then you can manage your life better. That is the beauty of this teaching. Then the Buddha didn't only proclaim to you these two noble truths, which is the reality and the cause of suffering. He also tell you suffering need not be, he said, there is a third noble truth that proclaim the possibility of enlightenment in the here and the now. You can realize Nibbana, which is the cessation of all suffering in the here and the now before you die. So suffering need not be if you have the wisdom and the understanding. Then not only that, he continued to express to you the fourth noble truth. He said, there is this fourth noble truth which explain clearly to you the path that leads to the end of suffering. If you are to cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, the Buddha said, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So this is the meditation. This is what you have to do if you want to be free from all suffering. So this aspect will change the outlook of Buddhism. Then when you understand this, you realize it not only explains to you the mundane aspect of life, it can even take you beyond the mundane to realize the enlightenment, the supramundane. Then after that, when you have the wisdom connected to your physical form and mind, then you will have the wisdom to live the noble life. Means you are not deluded by the phenomenal world. You will not attach, you will not cling, you will not hold, and you will not be afflicted anymore. You won't suffer anymore. And that is the beauty of his teaching. So this is how the teaching need to be understood, so that you can explain to people, so that when they try to tell you that, why do you want to believe in Buddhism? Why do you want to study Buddhism? It's so pessimistic. And then you can explain, Buddhism is not pessimistic. It's a very beautiful religion. It covers all aspects of life. It can give understanding to life. And when you understand life, you understand the secret of life, you will know how to live life. And your life will become very beautiful, meaningful. And you will have the ability to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life. And it is so rich in its content, so wide in its understanding, and so comprehensive in his teaching. So this part, as Buddhists, you have to develop the clear understanding. Then you can actually be a blessing to many. Then you can even explain all this to people who are new to Buddhism. Okay, now we continue. We will continue with happiness. The Buddha does not expect his follower to be constantly brooding on the ills of life and so make their life unhappy. Joy or pity has to be cultivated by every Buddhist as one of the essential prerequisites of enlightenment. Yeah, pity is an enlightenment factor. Yeah. So pity can arise when you know how to calm your mind down, when you know how to train your mind to be quiet, to be peaceful. Yeah. The silent mind without thought will lead to pity. Yeah. It's very natural. Then, in the opinion of many unbiased authors or writers, creeds alone cannot purify. I miss one page. Yeah, I miss one. Yeah. Okay. In the opinion of many unbiased writers or authors, Buddhists are reputed to be the happiest people in the whole world. They have no inferiority complex, that they are wretch sinners. That's what Yun Chan was trying to say. Because they don't think in that sense or in that way, that they are born sinner. But if you were to look at the Buddhist teaching, when you are born into this world, the form and mind, without wisdom, actually you are deluded. Understand? So they are not wrong in the sense that you are born sinner. Actually, it's not sinner. You are born unenlightened. Understand? Because you are not enlightened, you are deluded. But you haven't seen yet. Understand? But as you become more cunning, more selfish, more emotional, then you start to sin, you start to commit all the wrong thing. In that sense, I think our Buddhist teaching is so much more deep in its understanding. So it's not that we are all born sinner, no. When the form and mind come, you will inherit everything that you have over the eons and eons of birth and death, created that karmic nature. They call it karma. So the Buddha said, each and every one of us, when we are born into this universe, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So if you look at this truth, this aspect of understanding, which is the right view with regards to this form of mind, which is subject to karma, then you realize our entire life depends on karma, because we are born of it, and we inherit everything that karma, that karmic nature that we have created over the eons and eons of birth and death. The summation of all of your karmic actions, good and bad. Then, each and every moment we are subject to is conditioning. Born of karma, heir to the karma, conditioned and supported by our karma every moment, every instant. And we are what we are because of our karma. So all this will give us the right understanding to have the good life. We have to take care of karma. If we take care of karma, karma will take care of life because we inherit everything. So it doesn't mean that you are born sinner, you cannot come out of it. You are never born sinner. You are born of your karma. But before you connect and develop the awakening or the wisdom, you are deluded. That's it. So every life, every segment of the form and mind that come, you have to have the condition and the understanding to connect to the true mind, then develop the meditation accordingly and awaken. Then only the wisdom can be connected to your form and mind to allow you to understand life. Then live the noble life of an enlightened being. So this is a very unique understanding of the Buddhist teaching. So Buddhism has this very unique advantage. Okay, then we read on. The reason why they say Buddhists are the happiest person on this world is you have to qualify. Only Buddhists who have the Dhamma or understand the Dhamma are happy. We are not all Buddhists are happy. A lot of Buddhists, they call themselves Buddhists or traditional Buddhists or once a year Buddhists. That one also Buddhists. Who don't really understand the teaching. And some understand it just knowledge-wise. They are not able to apply the teaching. Means they don't really have the understanding. Such people, such Buddhists are not happy. They are also subject to suffering. Then we read on. They have no inferiority complex that they are wretched sinner. This one we have gone through. The member of the noble order, means the enlightened being, who lead the holy life in the fullest possible manner, are perhaps the happiest people. This is true. That's why in Pali the Buddha said, Aho sukhang, aho sukhang. Oh happy indeed, oh happy indeed. We shall be living in joy. Are some of the oft-repeated favorite sayings of his followers. There are many parts in the teaching where it is mentioned, the enlightened being. We are the happy ones. Then when you can have a chance to realize the enlightenment, they say Nibbana, which is the enlightenment, is the highest peace. Or highest happiness. Nibbana paramang sukhang. That's why this teaching, when you develop the wisdom, your mind states are different. Your understanding will make you very happy, peaceful, and no more suffering, no more fear, no more worry, anxiety, no more delusion. Okay, I read on that. One day, a certain dainty approached the Buddha and questioned him thus, who in the forest make their, what is this, wanted, horn? The saintly levers of the holy life, who by one daily meal do break their fast? Tell me how. Wow, the English I also cannot understand. Tell me how look they so serene of you. Wow, this type of English not easy. The Buddha replied, they make no lamentation over the past. These are enlightened beings' character. They will not lament over their past. They yearn not after that which is not come. Means the future that has yet to come, not a reality. They will not yearn for it, understand? Or dream about it, or look forward to have it. by what now is due, they maintain themselves. Means they maintain the present moment awareness. They always stay heedful, mindful, ever mindful of the moment. Hence comes it that they look serene or heal. He also answered the English in the same way, the question. So this is a beautiful explanation of enlightened being. Then the causal law in terms of happiness. In the Samyutta Nikaya is found an interesting interpretation of the dependent originating or paticca samuppada in terms of happiness. The Buddha said, suffering leads to confidence, saddha. Confidence leads to rapture, pamoja. Then rapture leads to joy, piti. Then joy leads to tranquility. Joy leads to tranquility, pasati. Then tranquility leads to happiness, sukang. Then happiness leads to samadhi. That's why the word concentration is wrong. Then samadhi leads to knowledge and vision of the way things are. Or of things as they truly are. This is the yatta bhuta jnana dasana. Knowledge and vision of the reality. And vision of things as they are. Yatta bhutanang jnana dasana. And then the knowledge and vision of the thing as they truly are to, they use the word repulsion. I think it should be disenchantment. They use the Pali word nibbida. Then disenchantment to non-attachment, viraga. Then non-attachment to deliverance, vimutti. Then deliverance leading to the extinction of passion, cessation of craving. That is to arahantship, means the realization of nibbana. The cessation, they give it a Pali name, a type of jnana, insight, kaya jnana. This important passage clearly indicates how suffering can lead to happiness and ultimately to sainthood. Do you understand how this teaching comes about? This one is only peculiar to Samyutta Nikaya. So, according to this sutta which the Buddha shared, what he is trying to explain to the follower or the monks and the lay devotee is, he said, most people, without suffering, you will not search for truth. Without suffering, you will not come and meditate. That's why, because of suffering, he said, you will come and search for truth. Then when you search for truth, you will go and meditate. Then when you go and meditate, the first thing you do is to train your mind. Remember? Train your mind to develop the five spiritual faculties. So when you train your mind to develop the five spiritual faculties, the first one is what? Saddha, faith. So that's why he say, from suffering leads to saddha or confidence. Then from saddha, very easy, saddha will lead to that joy. Well, when you have saddha, faith in the Buddha and his teaching, your mind become very calm, very composed. Then when you understand the beauty of the teaching, you will have a lot of joy. And this type of joy is not pity yet. Then you will strive on to train your mind. That's why from this pamoja, which is a type of, they use the word rapture. It's not really rapture. It's a type of like happy mind. then this one strive on with heedfulness. Actually, there is this virya first, virya, spiritual zeal. Then they will train their mind. That's why they will meditate. Then when they meditate, this pity will arise. When you are mindful, aware, pity will arise. Then from pity, you develop what they call tranquility or paucity. So paucity, tranquility is the stillness of mind, silent mind. So when you are very mindful, like I say, you develop anapanasati until very quiet, very still. Then that is paucity. That is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, paucity. When you develop paucity, if you continue to silent, relax into it, you will experience a type of very intense sukhang. They call blissfulness. And that one, people like to attach and cling because that mind state is very blissful. So here they use the word happiness. It's not really happiness. It's actually blissfulness. Then if you continue to relax and silent, then it becomes very stable. It will become samadhi. So samadhi is collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. And because of that, you can see things as they are, like just now, yata, buddha, na, jnana, dasana. You will develop the understanding. You will awaken to the truth and the reality. You can see things as they are. That's the reason why, from there, you can develop the knowledge and vision of things as they are. So samadhi is very important. Samadhi will allow you to see things as they are, like I always share with you. Then, with that understanding and the wisdom, you are no longer deluded, which means the phenomenal world got no power over you. So when that happens, you will not attach, you will not cling. Means there is what they call disenchantment. Means you know that this is not worth touching, not worth holding. So you like arise that mind state with wisdom, leading to disenchantment. And from disenchantment, it lead to non-grasping, non-attachment. That's why viraga, non-craving. Then non-craving or non-attachment will lead to enlightenment, liberation. They call vimutti. Deliverance or liberation. Then deliverance will lead to the final cessation of forming mind, extinction of passion, means complete cessation of craving, including the forming mind. So this aspect is the realization of Nibbana. That's how you become Arahant. The important passage clearly indicates how suffering can lead to happiness and ultimately to enlightenment, the sainthood way leading to Arahant. Okay, so this part clear. Any question? No question, we go on. Tolerance of Buddhism. No blind faith is necessary to understand this Four Noble Truths. The first two truths, which are mundane, exactly like I share with you, Lokiya. So Lokiya Dhamma. Lokiya is mundane. Then Lokuttara is supramundane. The second two truths, which are supramundane or Lokuttara, can be experienced by attaining sainthoodship. They call saintship. actually sainthoodship. But this second and second two truth means the third and the fourth. It's like that day I share with you. They are not both supramundane. Only the third noble truth is supramundane, whereas the fourth noble truth is the mundane cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path leading to the supramundane. So So that part, I think I have shared in the short notes. Okay. I will read on. It is on the bedrock of this fact, means this is the like the essence of his teaching, which could be verified by personal experience and tested by anybody. Means this is the truth that will stand up to investigation. That the Buddha Dhamma is built and not on the fear of the unknown. Buddhism is therefore rational and intensely practical. It's actually beyond that. Not only rational and intensely practical, it can be realized in the here and the now. So you will not have any doubt. Then in the Dhamma, there is nothing that is impractical or irrational. The Buddha practiced what he taught. He taught what he practiced. What he most emphasizes in his teaching is the practice. But the word should be cultivation. For creeds alone cannot purify a person. The Dhammapada states, though much he recite the sacred texts, but act not accordingly, that heedless person is like a cowherd who counts others' kid. He has no share in the blessing of a recluse. So this Dhammapada verse is a very clear-cut explanation that you only read the sacred text, means scholarly monk. You don't meditate to realize the fruition. It doesn't help because you need to awaken to the teaching. That's why you have to meditate and awaken. Otherwise, it's just knowledge. Okay, a rational and practical system cannot contain any mysterious or esoteric doctrine. In the Parinibbana Sutta, the Buddha emphatically declare, I have taught the truth without making any distinction between esoteric and exoteric doctrine. For in respect of the truth, Tathagata has no such thing as the close fist of teacher who keeps something back. So this one remind me of our Chinese Kung Fu. The master dare not teach you everything. Where they scared if they teach you everything, the student, being younger, more energetic and stronger, will defeat the teacher. Or they will beat up the teacher. They call Tou Tai Ta Si Fu. So this is typical of the Chinese Kung Fu series. But what the Buddha meant here is different. Because these are truths that can be realized in the here and the now by anybody. The Dhamma was there before him. That's why he said, he doesn't like want to tell you that, oh, this one is very, very esoteric, or very, they call it, Sankhya, Sanchiya. You understand? Mysterious, not really. Mystical, yes, correct, good. That word is very mystical, esoteric and all that. Actually, it's no. But if you don't understand, then it can be very mystical or esoteric. Like the Mahayana, you remember? They break it up into two. The gradual teaching and the sudden teaching. You heard of this, isn't it? Six Patriarch Platform Sutta we will have gone through. Not until Huining come, then only they understand that the two are one. They are not divided. Because since you thought enlightenment is gradual, so it's a gradual teaching. It's a, you must cultivate, polish until it shine, so that no dust can arise. Then one day, you will become enlightened. Whereas the southern school is the Huining school, or they call it the esoteric teaching. That one believe in sudden enlightenment. The moment you understand, you awaken. Actually, that is the truth. The moment you understand, you awaken. It's not gradual. Gradual means you practice, you do, but without understanding. It's when you do with understanding, or you cultivate with understanding, then when the condition is fulfilled, all of a sudden, the mind awakens. And that's what enlightenment is all about. The moment you awaken, you become enlightened. So it's always spontaneous, not gradual. So this part is very important. Then it doesn't mean that the Buddha, every time with a closed fist, hold back something. No. Okay, we read on. Anattaram and abahiram are the words used by the Buddha. If the Buddha had taught, this word correct or not? It should be taught, isn't it? Yeah? Yeah? Not the thinking, isn't it? Yeah? If the Buddha had taught this much of my doctrine, I will not teach other. Oh, correct. Correct. The word if he has think that way. Okay, if the Buddha had taught this much of my teaching or doctrine, I will not teach others. Or only this much of my teaching or doctrine, I will teach others. He would have fallen into the category of teacher who keep a closed fist. If the Buddha had taught, to this person I will teach, or to this person I will not teach. The Buddha would have created an inner circle and outer circle. The Buddha makes no such distinction. Here the author doesn't know how to explain. What is important is the Buddha doesn't discriminate like normal people. Like I used to tell you, oh, you are my good friend. Oh, you know me longer. I will teach you. Oh, people whom I don't know, I will not teach. I already shared with you all before. My nature is the same. Sometimes you don't know me. If there is condition, I will share, I will teach. Sometimes you may be very close to me, but if there is no condition, Dhamma doesn't flow. That's why it's always understanding, wisdom. The understanding is the one that makes the enlightened being unique. The enlightened being just echo and flow. There is no more self to discriminate. Nature is condition, not there, nothing happens. When there is condition, things will happen. So that's the reason why sometimes you see people whom I don't know, they suddenly appear. But when there is condition, my nature will know. Then I will share. Then they will receive. And that's how Dhamma is. That's why this author don't know how to explain it. He tried to use the whole passage to try to describe what he wants to describe. Okay, we read on. With respect to secret doctrine, the Buddha said in the Anguttara Nikaya, O disciple, there are three to whom secrecy belongs and not openness. Who are they? Secrecy belongs to woman, not openness. Secrecy belongs to priestly wisdom, not openness. Secrecy belongs to false doctrine, not openness. The doctrines and rules proclaimed by the perfect Buddha shine before all the world and is not in secret. So this is the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching. Especially those teachings that are towards the cult system and all those things. They will tell you what, no? They will warn you. All these are secret teaching. You cannot tell even your close relative. your own husband or your wife or what. Oh, and they threaten you one. No? If you do that, you will get into very bad coming, retribution and sort of thing. Last time, I don't know you heard of this cow or not. It meant they were Yikuan Tao. It's called Yikuan Tao. What is the English equivalent? They really threaten you. That one, a lot, and now my husband and wife also cannot talk. You're not supposed to know one. The cult's teaching is like that one. You're not supposed to tell anybody also. Tantric also like that. Oh, yeah, secret teaching. Yeah, the tantra, tantric teaching. But you have to understand, truth is just truth. There is no such thing as I cannot tell you one. No. Do you understand? That's why for the Buddha, maybe this brings about one condition for me to share with you all. Do you know when my nature share, I share everything. But like I used to say, when you are not ready, no point. Sometimes I share also, hardly anybody understand. That's why in the early day when I came out to share, I realized a lot are not ready. And my nature actually developed the understanding way ahead of the civilization at the time. So at that time, I think 2004 only I came out. But I was ready in 1989. So for 15 years, my nature didn't do anything. But later when condition arise, when it starts to share, so I thought, most living beings are like me. What you need is the Dhamma. The moment you hear the Dhamma, you will awaken. After sharing for about a few months, I realized that is not the case. No. I realized not everybody has the same type of past. And most of them can't even understand what I say. Especially when I started with the three turning of the Four Noble Truths, everybody was looking at me. Then when I explained form is unreal, everybody was looking at me. Then the Four Noble Truths, the way I share it, using the three turning, following the Dhamma Cakkappavattana Sutta, there was so much problem initially. Because it's like they haven't heard of this three turning before. No? And I connect it to the three types of wisdom and all those things. But my nature understand. Then later on I realize even the essential Dhamma also they have not understood. So what they need is the essential Dhamma. That's why I go back to the essential Dhamma. I have to start teaching the five spiritual faculties, the five mental hindrances, the three evil roots. Then the Four Noble Truths in its simple form, Anasana. I try not to get into the three turning, because the three turning is a bit complex for them. So I had to reorganize the way I teach and share. That's why a lot of them thought I repeat. I keep on repeating. It's not repeat, because my nature knew they have not developed the understanding. But to them, not until I emphasize the same thing over and over again for many times, very few can really pick it up. And the problem with a lot of these cultivators is they didn't see the importance of what my nature shared. They thought Four Noble Truths is for kindergarten people, primary school or this Sunday school children. They want to go higher on. They want to do vipassana. They are interested in four foundations of mindfulness, jhana, jnana. That's why they cannot learn. And they are so interested in method and technique. This one, vipassana. That one, samatha. I only want vipassana. So they become confused, gullible, and all those things. So it took my nature quite a while to explain that methods and technique never defines the meditation. And no amount of sitting, method, and technique can bring forth the enlightenment. The real one is the daily mindfulness, the stability of heedfulness. From daily mindfulness leading to heedfulness and honest thing, then how to decondition the heedless thinking and develop all this. So it took quite a while. So what I'm trying to explain to you is this teaching is very, very unique, very profound. But when you understand, it's very easy. When you don't understand, it's very difficult. So whatever my nature share, when there is condition, it will share. So during that time, I remember a lot of things happened, but they all don't know. Sometimes when I share, I spoke on things that they are not ready to understand. But then the nature just have the condition and it continue to share. That's the reason why during that time when they did the transcript on the five aggregate of form and mind, the first two, I remember, a lot of them cannot follow. Then later on, I even cover the Noble Eightfold Path, every path factor. But I realized it's not this one that they want, because the essential Dhamma also they can't understand. So that one is actually for the higher being, because they wanted it. So that's the reason why there were conditions for Kayamita at that time to ask certain aspect of the teaching. Then I explained it in such a way that it covered all those things. But it was good, at least after I covered all those things, then only I came to realize that I have to reverse all the teaching. Then anatta was not easy that time, even impermanent. I also share a lot that time, even Salika Sutta and many other Sutta, because I remember this Bunchai and this Angatana last time passed away already, Angatana. That one is Angatana, the one that printed all this Vipassana book together with Bunchai. Then we go and visit with Stephanie. The wife passed away, she very old. Somewhere near Genting there. He used to give me this book. He has a lot of this book, and he know I can understand. So he gave me volume after volume. Then because of that, I read this Salika Sutta. Then I know. I straight away read, I know. But not the long-winded session. So I normally share with the Kayamita, either one session or two sessions, I finish. But those sutta were beautiful at that time. But it was ahead of time. I think most of them cannot understand. But even Paticca Samuppada, or that time I shared, but they can't understand. The Paticca Samuppada, when Cindy was around, she did the transcript and did up the booklet, the formatting, everything so beautifully. And that was printed in 2005, It was so early, I came out to share only 2004. So all this were ahead of time, actually. Then this dependent origination, the telling, only recently at the retreat, only you all get the deep understanding. Before that, you all cannot understand. So like the Buddha, it's not to say he don't want to teach. Like for me, if there is condition, I will share everything. Do you know why I do that? Because there is nothing for those enlightened beings to think selfishly, or must hide a bit. Otherwise, after I teach, my student or my disciple all know what I already know. Then there is nothing to teach. Then they will go away, they will not come. If you think like that, means you don't have the Dhamma. Because this Dhamma is not ordinary Dhamma. It's just like, I don't know what analogy to give you. You see, if you want to learn something, like Kung Fu, let's say Kung Fu, okay, certain particular Kung Fu. If let's say you go and see that teacher already trained himself for 20, 30 years. 20, 30 years means they already develop a lot of understanding, then they have built up their what they call what do you call gong leg ah, gong leg ah, in English is what internal energy. How you call in English ah? What is the word? So they are, let's say they are 20 years or 30 years of this type of energy that they have developed. And you just new, no? You go in, you got nothing. Then you start with what? Ma pu, the horse stand. Then you build up. Ho, ha, ho, ha. You know, you take how long for you to have that type of training and gong leg. So, if they are true teacher, they are not scared to teach you. Even if they teach you, it takes you a long time to master all those skills, understand? No? Then you have to have a very different type of mind to modify and improve on what you learn. And then you can be better than the teacher, understand? No? Otherwise, it's no way. Yeah. That's why the Dhamma is even more complex than this one. The Dhamma you cannot shortcut on unless you have cultivated in your past life before. Understand? You have inherited the spiritual nature. And then this life you come, the moment my nature share with you, you connect, you inherit very fast. Then it's like, wow, that Kayanamita progress very fast. No, because in the past he has done a lot of homework already. But you don't know, understand? But even, let's say, he inherit and he managed to reach back to the stage which is higher than mine. It's okay, understand? Then after that, I can learn from him, understand? So the true learning is not selfish. Because the more I share, the more I teach, the more my nature understands. Do you know why or not? You can know why or not? Why I say that or not? The more I share, the more I understand. Pass the mic to Yuan Chan. Yeah. This part is very important. Push it up. No, screw the bottom. Bottom is loose. Sorry, Yuan Chan.
Normally, when you teach, you will have to do some checking.
No, I don't need that. I don't need that. I share, the more I teach, the more I learn. Is like what the law of karma is all about. Understand? Not? You understand? Not? Law of karma. The more I give, the more I receive. You understand?
Use my own experience. If I have to do, if I want to teach, I have to do research.
That stage you are in because you based on knowledge.
So when I do my research, I have a better understanding.
Correct.
And then that one is true for to understand better.
For most people, when they go through phase one of Dhamma, phase one of Dhamma means the learning of the teaching. Then when you put it into practice or cultivation, it's different again. That one is patipatti. But after you have developed the understanding and the awakening, the other phase is different again. The other phase is you have to share. You have to give. The more you give, the more you share, the more your nature receives. And there are a few ways to understand it. One is like the law of karma. You reap what you sow. That's the reason why, because my nature, it shares very fast and very profound teaching. So every life it come, it do that. That's why I inherited that karmic ability. So whenever this form and mind come, I will receive teaching or truth equally fast. Do you understand? Because when I share, it's very fast, very potent. If you have the condition, you will awaken straight away on. Like winning, like that one. And because of that, when I come, like this form of mind, this segment, this life, I receive very fast. Sometimes the person or teacher who said those truths doesn't understand. But my nature awakened already. My nature understand already. Wherever there is truth, this nature understand. Then because that's the way I share and I give, that is the way my nature also receive. Then the other thing is, this bodhisattva way is very complicated. You have to go through a lot of this, what they call form and mind, segmented life training. So every time you come as a bodhisattva, means you choose to come. You have to go through, like Kuan Yin, all the 31 planes. You have to experience all of life. Like this segment, my nature is still sharing, teaching, and learning. Because you have to understand, like what the Buddha said, the law of karma is very, very complex. Very, very complex. Complicated. You need to have great wisdom to completely understand. So you have to learn to see all this karmic conditioning, cause and effect, cause and effect. That's why this nature now, it comes, this life, every kayamita that come, they are all different. But how come I know how to share? I can sense what their past is. What are the things they need? And why are they here? So all this come from teaching, sharing. That's why the moment I do this, I learn a lot of karmic conditioning, nature, how things are possible, how they can receive. Then how the condition, sometimes very funny one also, can come into being. If my nature don't come out and share, I cannot understand all this. Because I am not exposed to it. Do you understand? That's why this sharing is not what you think. That's why the more you share, the more you understand. Then you have to combine with the other perfection, the 10 perfection, especially Adhitana. You must know how to make aspiration, send pure wish, then invoke power merits, then make aspiration for certain causes and conditions to realize certain things. That's why my this nature finally perfected the Adhitana. Then it every time invoke the causes and conditions whenever it arises for certain critical things. The paramita already there. The parameters means the condition for its arising. It's wisdom and understanding, choose them. Then whenever it arises, it wants to have certain type of understanding. Then later on, it just aspire for the highest understanding at any time it arises, whatever the civilization is, whatever the world system is, the era and all those things. So it doesn't limit itself to Buddhism and all those things. So all these will evolve. That every bodhisattva is different. Every great being is different. It is because of all this understanding that the training becomes different. That's the reason why this line, this segmented line, Maitreya came and asked this nature to share. Because of the unique understanding. One is the direct Dhamma. This direct teaching immediately touch your heart, relate to life, you can understand. The second one is the understanding to cut short your bodhisattva way training. So these two is very unique. That's the reason why 2008 Maitreya's nature came. Then it made that request. And straight away this nature knew what the thing was. That's why I got no hesitation. I even thank him, have a lot of gratitude. Then I said, you are the Sammasambuddha. You don't have to be so like formal or so courteous. Where he used the word, 请你把正法传下去. Please transmit the true Dhamma. Actually, no need to say please. I said, you just instruct. This nature will do. Well, you are the Sammasambuddha. But all these are understood. That's why the conditions are very beautiful. I share some of this in the blue book, the cultivation of the bodhisattva way. Towards the end, you go and read. It's all there. Okay. So now you understand. The more you share, the more you receive. So don't have this mundane thinking selfish. I better don't teach everything. I better keep some, so that they will still respect me. This is all from the thought, understand? Mundane. That's why people who don't have the understanding, they will not progress. Because even like Kung Fu, you teach everything, then your student become very good. Then what happens? He can spar with you, isn't it? Then both of you can learn new things, isn't it? Correct or not? Otherwise, he always below you. How to learn from him? Understand or not? That's why I teach everything. Let them understand. Then when they have the understanding, they can spar with you. Then chit-chok. Understand or not? Cantonese, correct or not? Chit-chok. Like spar. Chit-chok kung fu. Chit-chok. You never see swordsmanship. Cantonese show. Oh, no wonder you don't know this word. Means like spa with you. Exchange understanding of swordsmanship or skill. I think Pamasuri is correct. Chit-chok kung fu. So when you have that understanding, you will teach everything. And you hope, like badminton, if you want to learn and improve yourself, you have to play with who? Better player. Otherwise, you cannot be tested. Understand not? Then you learn from him. Understand not? Dhamma is the same. So don't be afraid. Train people up. Teach them. Then when they become good, you will learn back from him. That's why meditation is the same. If you want to improve your game, badminton, you must play with good player. So if you want to improve your Dhamma understanding, you must interact with wise people. Understand not? Wiser people. Not only wise. Understand not? Great beings. Then you learn very fast. Because they see, they know already. Then they can tell you. Because they have gone way beyond. That's the reason why in most classes, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday, I always share and say, the Dhamma is such. You have to really, really develop the cultivation and the training. The more you train, the more you understand. Then you have to reach that training before you can go beyond to understand the higher teaching or those that are more advanced. It's just like this Dhamma door, you don't open. What is inside the Dhamma understanding and treasure beyond this door, you cannot understand. But the moment you penetrate this door, then you go in and learn very fast. And this is what path and friction is all about. Because they don't understand what is path. Path is the moment you awaken, means that cessation of form and mind, even split second, let's say. Then that form and mind understand what that thing is. So it can be a path to the first stage of sainthood. Then the three fetters gone. But he hasn't stabilized his understanding. You understand? It's like the Dhamma door he detected already. Then with that detection he go in, whatever he see inside, he understand. Then he had to reflect, contemplate and stabilize the understanding. So it's like you go through the cessation. Then after that, your silent mind become different. The direct seeing become different. Then you start to understand things very fast. Then after that, when this one stabilizes already, then only you can touch the path for the second stage of sainthood. Then third stage, fourth stage, then the arahantship way. The realization of arahantship. Then you want to go the bodhisattva way. There is another different path of training. So what you need to understand is the path and fruition keep on happening at every stage. But certain people, they come, straight away they reach third stage of sainthood, anagami. Sometimes they straight away become arahant. It's not to say that they straight away become arahant. If you are in the past, they have done all this before. So the moment they see through, they understand like Hui Ning, he straight away awakened to the true nature. And he only need a few pointer from the fifth patriarch, about the mundane mind, how to use it and yet not affected by it. He came to create awakening. It's because he has cultivated all this before. Then the moment he meets somebody who has the understanding, that person just has to point out a few things, straight away they move. Like Samkaya Nimitta. Yeah. The moment I see, I saw the sign and the sign, I say, you listen, then I explain. Then they penetrate very fast, they progress very fast. Yeah. Even like Eric earlier on also. Yeah. Then even a few Kaya Nimitta. Then recently I think another one came. I also explained. Because everyone is different. When your condition is there, things will unfold. That's the reason why I say our recent retreat, before that I say a lot of you all will progress and benefit. And really true, after that, very different. You all come back, your understanding all different. Even my daughter, she sensed it. The first retreat and the second retreat were world apart. Even Adeline, they all know. Where is your mom? Oh, there. Very different, understand? Oh, the first retreat, you thought you learned a lot already. Then after that, if you diligently continue, after the second retreat, wow, completely different again. That's why as you understand, the understanding will make you different again. Then I always share with you all, remember, the same sharing, maybe Tuesday class, Thursday class, or Sunday class. After you have developed the cultivation, after a period, let's say 3 months, 6 months, you listen to the same talk again, I tell you. Different again. The deeper level of understanding is all there. Because this sharing is for all level. So if you are at different level, you can only receive up to that level. Whatever beyond that, you cannot. So this aspect of understanding is very much. That's why be patient. You cannot hurry on. Unless your path is strong, then you can move very fast. It's like shortcut. It's not really shortcut. It's because you have done the hard work before. So if you have not inherited those things, don't worry, be patient. Slow and steady. And everything will unfold. Your faith is very important. Then your vow, your aspiration. When you understand this, you work towards it, it will cut short your training very, very fast. Like I explained, whether you got sasana or no sasana, you make this bodhisattva vow, make this aspiration, the right view, follow the blue book. I tell you, even without sasana, your form and mind that come will have all this understanding. That's why you can progress very fast after that. You don't have to be like what happened in the past. In the past, whether got sasana or no sasana, you also don't understand. Then got sasana, you arise. Then you miss that window. Then after that, no more sasana, you get lost again. That's why your karmic is like a wave. Cycle, up and down, up and down. But with this understanding, life after life, even without sasana, that right view, that right understanding that you have vowed and made aspiration through your merits and understanding, it will stay there. Then the bodhi mind, if you plant it with faith, determination, very sincerely, with very strong intent and resolution, it will have its potency. That's why this one will be very firmly planted. Then life after life, when the form and mind arise, this bodhi mind will sprout. This bodhi mind will arise. Then you receive very fast. Then you connect also very fast. Then your affinity with the great being, their vow will take you along. Your request for their protection, blessing, and protection. So these three things are very important. When you request for all these great beings, their blessing, protection, and guidance, these will take you along. And you technically don't have to do anything. It's like automatic. Okay, that part may be enough. So you don't have to remember, don't worry, because it's all in the recording. Okay, I read on. Page 303. Yeah? It is true that the Buddha had not expressed his view about some problems that perplex mankind. Eh? How come this sentence like that? It is true that the Buddha had not expressed his view about some problem that perplexed mankind. Ah, okay, correct. He was characteristically silent on these controversial things or subjects because they were irrelevant to his noble mission and unessential to one's emancipation. On a certain occasion, a certain bhikkhu named Malukaputta approached the Buddha and impatiently demanded an immediate solution of some speculative problem on the threat of discarding the rope forthwith. Lord, he said, this theory have not been elucidated, have been set aside and rejected by the Exalted One, whether the world is eternal or not eternal, whether the world is finite or infinite, whether the life principle, jiva, is the same as the body, or whether the life principle is one and the body is another, whether the Tathagata after death is or is not, whether the Tathagata after death both is or is not, whether the Tathagata after death neither is or is not. So the advice given by the Buddha is not to waste time and energy over such ideal speculation, which was detrimental to moral progress or spiritual progress. So this one, I think, is easy to understand. Huh? The Buddha explained it before at the Samsipa forest group. He held up a handful of leaves, you remember? And asked the monk, O bhikkhu, which is more, the leaf in my hand or the leaf that is in the forest? So the disciple replied, surely the leaf in the forest is so much more than what you held in your hand. And you know what the Buddha told them or not? The Buddha replied, yes, likewise, what I have understood and realized is like the leaves in the forest. But what I have taught you are just this handful. And why? Because this handful, they are conducive for enlightenment in the here and the now, for awakening, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation leading to Nibbana, enlightenment. And he even told the monk, what are these handful? They are essentially the essence of the Buddha's teaching, the Four Noble Truths and its three turning. That's the reason why the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta is very powerful. But these are the handful of leaves needed for liberation, for enlightenment. So the focus should be on this, not to ask all those speculative questions. Yeah? So this part, I think, easy to understand. It is as if a man were pierced by the arrow thickly smeared with poison, and he should say to the surgeon who wants to extract it, I shall not allow the arrow to be extracted until I know the detail of the person who wounded me, the nature of the arrow with which I was pierced, etc. So that is just an analogy. Huh? That person would die before this would ever be known by him. In the same way, that person would die before this question has been elucidated. Means you should use your time, your precious lifetime or human lifespan to cultivate the Dhamma, the spiritual understanding, the Four Noble Truths, instead of wasting time on non-essential teaching or Dhamma or speculative knowledge. The solving of this metaphysical question did not lead to aversion or disenchantment, passionlessness, enlightenment or nirvana. On another occasion, when his disciples sought information about this point, he silenced them by citing the parable of the elephant and the blind man. This one, I think, is also another good parable. An elephant was presented to some blind men to describe what it looks like. Those who touched the different parts of the elephant's body expressed their own particular idea about the elephant. They argued among themselves, and their argument naturally ended in quarrel. Unless speculations that do not tend to emancipation and that merely gratify the curiosity, the Buddha dismissed with his characteristic silence. That's why the Buddha just keep quiet. He doesn't want to say anything. Then sometimes if you text something on the Maitreya-mitta side, if you realize I didn't reply and didn't comment, you better understand one. What that one is. If I rejoice and what, then you know it's a good one. Otherwise, I just don't say anything. Understand? But if it's somebody who are new and who doesn't understand what the Kayamita website is meant to be, sometimes Sui An will reprimand him. Sui An will text him. Or when Sui An is busy, I will just reply in a nice way so that they can understand. Okay, we read on. Buddhism does not profess to provide an explanation to all ethical and philosophical problems that interest mankind. Neither does it deal with ideal speculation and theorizing that do not tend to edification. Buddhism has a practical and specific purpose: the end of all suffering, or cessation of all suffering. And with that goal in view, all irrelevant side issues are completely set aside. Nevertheless, every encouragement is given to keen investigation into the real nature of life. No coercion, prosecution, or fanaticism play any part in Buddhism. To the unique credit of Buddhism, it must be said that throughout its peaceful march of 2,500 years, no drop of blood has been shed in the name of the Buddha. No mighty monarch has wrenched his powerful sword to propagate the Dhamma, and no conversion has been made either by force or by repulsive method. Yet the Buddha was the first and the greatest missionary that live on earth. Buddhism has spread and is still spreading rapidly throughout the world, and is making peaceful penetration to all countries, mainly owing to its intrinsic merits and unsurpassed beauty of its teaching, and not to all with the aid of imperialism, militarism, or any other indirect proselytizing agency. Adolf Hartley writes, "Alone of all the great world religion, Buddhism makes its way without prosecution, censorship, or inquisition. In all this respect, its record is enormously superior to that of Christianity, which makes its way among people wedded to materialism and which was able to justify the bloodthirsty tendency of its adherence by an appeal to savage Bronze Age literature of the Old Testament." Then Lord Russell, I think this one is Bertrand Russell, remark, "Of the great religion of history, I prefer Buddhism, especially in its earliest form, because it has had the smallest element of prosecution. In the name of the Buddha, no sacred place was reddened with the blood of innocent women, nor sincere thinkers were burned alive, and there was no merciless roasting of heretic." Okay, we end here. It's almost 10 o'clock. So I will continue the next Tuesday. Oh, still quite a bit to go. Yeah, okay, never mind. Page 306. Okay, we end here. So we quickly share merit, transfer merit. Then after that, those who have time, you can have your food. Then you can see the show, live show. Okay, let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed. Then we shall share all these merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakantu lokasasana itawata ca amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati sidya idang menya hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo devo asatu kalena sasa sampati hetu ca Fito bhavatu loko ca Raja bhavatu dhammiko Imena punyang kamena Mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu Yava nivana patiya Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect, triple jam, then we end.